Hey, welcome back to the podcast. Today we have Nathan Murray with House Rules Board Game Lounge. Here in Grand Rapids, one of the fastest growing bars or lounges or entertainment spaces in town. They consistently have to turn people away. They're so popular. So anyway, today Nate talks about the challenges he had starting the businesses, the bumps and bruises, the times that they had to kind of get through in order to get things even rolling, success of his partnership, some of the things that they've done to be successful, and some of the exciting things they have planned in the coming months and years ahead. So anyway, this is an excellent podcast. Nate has great energy, and I hope you get as much out of this as I did. Enjoy. All right, welcome back. Today we have Nate with House Rules Board Game Lounge. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, how we got started, a little bit of the background of the bar, lounge, et cetera, and a little bit of his story. So
yeah, sounds great.
Start with, you know, where you grew up.
Yeah, so I grew up in northern Michigan in a little town called Central Lake. I graduated with 40 people, so it was very small. The people I went to kindergarten with were the same people I graduated high school with, so it was a very unique situation. That's where I grew up there. I have two sisters and one brother I lived with and a couple other sisters. And then I went to school at Grand Valley, and from there I kind of traveled around the country, but yeah, grew up in northern Michigan.
So did you start off as a bar owner? Like, you always been in the bar business or?
No. Nope. I never in college. I never did it at all. I wasn't as interested in the bar portion of what we did.
Sure.
I was more interested in the gaming portion of what we did.
Okay.
So we're a board game bar. I was much more interested in the board game portion of it. And that's kind of it. I knew about drinks. I knew how to make a drink. I enjoy drinking, but I'd never done it. I'd never worked it at all. Yeah.
So how'd you come to get into the business?
Yeah. So I got this idea. I wanted to start my own business, and I tried to think of what the best business in the world to be would be. And I thought the best business is a business you don't have to convince people they need. And I thought that was an oil change. Everyone needs an oil change. I don't need to convince anyone they need it. You just got to put it in the right spot. And I thought that what must have changed with the oil change industry is that they weren't geared toward women. And I thought an oil change industry geared toward women would be a great business. So that was my idea. I found a franchise in Colorado, Denver, Colorado, and my wife and I flew out there. And we went and sat in the seminar, and why we were there, we were looking for something fun to do. We've been big board game players for years, and we found something called a board game bar. It was called a Board Game Republic. I didn't even know what those words meant. A board game bar, what is that? I don't know what that even is. And we went and checked it out. It was in like a kind of a back of a factory area, and we walked in, and it was, you know, 500 games on the wall. I think they had like canned PBR and Miller Lite and boxes of wine. I think they had like Totino's pizza rolls they were serving out of a microwave. So the place was real different, but I was blown away. I'd never seen anything like this. I loved games. I loved the experience. And I thought it looked a lot like Grand Rapids, honestly. It kind of looked to me like a brewery, kind of a brewery vibe, but with all these games. And from there, I kind of got this idea that maybe I don't want to be an oil change operator. I want to be a board game bar owner. And that started a process that started about 5 years of trying to be a board game bar owner. And that's how it started. And anyone I talked to in these years coming up, I told them about my board game bar idea. They said the same thing. What does that even mean? What do you mean play board games? And people don't get it. And people still don't get it to this day. And so I told everyone I could about it. I tried to get a loan. I went to the SBA, put together a business plan. I made plans to quit my job, and I could not get an SBA loan. I could not secure the funding. They had really good reasons why. They said, first, I had no experience owning a bar. 100% correct. Never worked in one in my life. The business was, they thought was an unproven concept. I thought it was kind of a baloney excuse, like unproven. Okay. Call it a sports bar. What's the matter? What it is. It's a bar. It's,
right.
It's games. And they said no. And then the other reason they had was that I was too leveraged. I had to leverage every asset I ever had to get in this business. I was 100% in, and the SBA doesn't like you to be that. They don't want you to be all in because it's a risky move. And this would have been 2019, so right before COVID.
Yeah.
And I was really mad about it, and I was upset. I thought it was kind of ridiculous. I was mad at the bank, but in hindsight, can you imagine taking out $500,000 loan, being 110% leveraged, and then COVID hit and shut you down? I mean, in hindsight, like, what a blessing, right? Like, I'm glad that lady said the things that she said to me. And the SBA lady was really cool. She actually said, Don't be confused about this. If you default on this loan, the SBA will take everything you own. You will lose your house. You will lose your car. Your kids will lose you will lose everything. They will take it all. Like, it's not a joke. Like, it's not for fun. And so I appreciate her saying that, because she was 100% accurate. So I let that dream go. I just figured I'll just work till I retire and die and hate every minute of it, and that would be the end of it. Well, in the meantime, I got a call from a friend in Northern Michigan in Central Lake, still there, King Orchards, my friend Courtney. She said, somebody's opened up a board game bar in Grand Rapids. And I said, what? I was immediately mad. I was so mad about this. They took my idea. And I said, well, I said, you cool guys? Like, yeah, he's super cool. I said, should I give him a call? She goes, you should give him a call. So I got his number. I called him up, said, hey, you don't know me. My name's Nathan. I had this board game bar concept. I'd love to talk with you. He said, come on in. Came in that afternoon. We talked, and the rest is history. And we started a business shortly after that. And this would have been, 2020, the end of 2020, the beginning of 2021. And the rest is history. And now we're going 4 years strong at House Rules Lounge, and we're expanding, and things are moving great. So
that's amazing. But you probably, if you wouldn't have done all that legwork ahead of time, and you wouldn't have been ready when somebody mentioned that, hey, somebody else is, and you wouldn't have had the funding, your partner. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what's, is that a, 50-50 work, or is it 50-50 financial? You don't have to get into the details. Yeah. But
so my partner and I are 50-50 partners. When I rolled into this bar and said we should be partners, he told me the same thing the bank said. You've never worked a bar in your life. I don't know. I want to be your partner. You've never done this. And he was 100% right. So I just said, let me work for free. He was just the one guy. I said, I'll show up and work for free. You don't have to pay me. I just want to learn about how this bar works. And he said, okay. So I showed up and I poured beers and swept the floor and anything that I could do, I would do it. And then we just sort of talked. I realized we were going to be compatible personalities. If you're going to have a business partner, you got to get along with them. It's a marriage of sorts. And we talked about that, but yeah, we're 50-50 partners. We're invested equally. We wanted to operate it as an equal. My partner, Brian, was great. We get along. We split every decision. We've never had an argument. We get along great. So it's been really fortunate. That is a shock for a guy that I didn't know at all. I just showed up and then, but we work great together. It's been a good process. Good teamwork.
Awesome. Now, I've heard partnerships, the best thing or the worst thing. But one common thing I've heard over and over, especially recently, is that you cannot, most people cannot do it all on their own, whether it's finances or running it. And I find that in myself. I'm so much better off partnering in some fashion with somebody else.
Yeah.
Now, when you're tying your finances and your livelihood and caring for your kids together, it's a little bigger stakes. And so that sounds like it's a great setup.
Yeah, it's worked out well. Brian, I think he owned the business before and he rebranded it as House Rules. And I think he maybe thought he didn't want a partner, but after we connected, I think he realized he did want a partner. He had been doing it for 5 years solo. And that's a tough business. That's every hour, every day you're at the bar, at the business, it's an 80 hour a week job. And I think that really takes a toll on a person. And once we were partners, he got a lot of much needed work-life balance. And I got to, do something I've been dreaming about for years. So yeah, it worked out well.
Awesome. So what are anything crazy that you've had to work through outside of the COVID startup, I suppose?
Nothing super crazy, I would say. Anytime you get involved with the a liquor license, particularly in Michigan, you're going to be working with the MLCC. They have 1.5 million rules. You're definitely going to need a couple lawyers involved. It's a lot of stuff. So we had to jump through a lot of hoops with the MLCC. Not impossible, just it's tedious. And it can be quite expensive. If you've ever looked into a liquor license, it can be quite costly. I'm sure in Miami, they're probably $10 million for a liquor license. It depends where you are geographically. Sure. So there was a lot of hurdles to go through that. But it was just a lot of trial and error, really. Brian and I's favorite saying is we're always willing to give something a shot. So let's try it out and see what works. And we did a lot of that.
Nice.
A lot of trial and error.
Yep. What's probably been the biggest success of those trials? Or maybe one or two of those?
I think the biggest thing that we sort of, biggest hurdles we got over and we sort of managed was we had to really embrace this turntable mindset. If you're going to own a restaurant, you probably heard the phrase, you got to turn tables. Mm-hmm. Restaurants become profitable by turning lots of tables over quickly and getting more people in. And I propose, and it was in our business plan, that we actually don't have the turntables. We want people to stay there for hours. If they want to come in and stay 8 hours and play games, that's a great idea. They'll spend more, they'll drink more, they'll make a lot of money. And we got about 6 months into it and we realized that simply wasn't the case. There's a spending curve that everyone has where it starts off real high and then it dies right down. And so people who were there for literally 5, 6, and 7 hours in our place were that last 2 hours, they just weren't spending anything. You can only drink so much. You can only eat so much.
Sure.
And so we really had to embrace this idea that we're not technically turning tables, but we need to be aware of how long people are and kick them out. So we have a 3-hour maximum reservation window. Most people book two to 3 hours and then we get them out and get the next people in. Okay. That was one hurdle we had to jump through real quick.
Interesting.
And that helped. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. It's just amazing. I've been there, and it's a cool setup. You have games all around.
Yeah.
So you have games. So part of your business model, what do you sell?
Yeah. So we're a board game bar lounge. So we have 650 games on the wall. You can come in and play them. All ages friendly all the time. It's $5 a person to play games up to 3 hours. Once you're there, we have a full bar, beer, wine, and cocktails. We have lots of non-alcoholic options. We have more non-alcoholic options than any bar in Grand Rapids.
Awesome.
All ages friendly, kid friendly. In addition, we have a small retail section and we have a small snack section. And that's what we have right now. We are currently in the process of expanding, though. We're adding 50 more seats and we're building the kitchen, which is a big deal. And so I'm very excited for that. That's the next big hurdle. But right now, that's what we're doing.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting mountain to climb, you know, adding food and a kitchen and the staff for the kitchen and keeping people happy and choosing the menu. Yeah. Like I've heard, you know, it'll be interesting to follow that. So.
Yeah, I've heard horror stories, and anyone who's owned a restaurant will probably tell you horror stories, and they're not wrong. I think what we have going for us that's a little bit different is we have people showing up. We're busy all the time. We turn away probably 50 to 100 people on Saturday, and probably 25 people every single day. We're turning people away.
Wow.
And so what that tells me is that if we bring in food, that's going to be an additional revenue stream, but also the food just has to not be terrible. That's what I told Brian too. Is our food just has to not be terrible. It's going to be great, but it just only has to not be terrible. They're already there. I don't have to bring people in with my food. Like we're a restaurant. If you were to start one up, you got to convince people to come in. And that sounds like a huge deal. I don't have to do that. So I'm kind of hoping that works out, but we're definitely hiring a chef and he's going to be running it. My dad told me a long time ago, if you're hire people who are smarter than you, and I think this is a good example of that. I'm not going to try to run this kitchen. I don't know how to run a kitchen. I'm going to hire someone to do it. And I think that'll help us out a lot.
So no microwave Totino's pizza rolls.
No offense to Totino's. I love Totino's, to be quite honest.
They're great for home.
No. Yeah, we'll do something else. It's going to be sliders and a build-your-own fry bar called Bry's Fries. This is Brian's dream.
Okay.
So if you want to pick your type of fry, you want waffle fries, sweet potato fries, shoestring fries, whatever, put your toppings on it, cheese and meat, kind of like a loaded nacho, but fry concept.
Okay.
That's Bry's Fries. So that's going to be the idea. We're going to run with that.
Sweet.
So,
I'll have to come in and check those out for sure.
Yeah.
So is there a particular area, like if you were to start over somewhere else, is there any thought about that, first of all?
Expanding?
Expanding to a different location eventually.
Yeah, absolutely. I think House Rules really has a special formula that I think that could be duplicated, and I would like to expand it. My partner, Brian, was a little more reluctant than I was. He's coming around.
Mm-hmm.
I think what it is he just knows the amount of work that was required to build a business, and he's hesitant to do it again. And I don't blame him. It is a lot of work, but I feel like we got the special sauce that I think we could duplicate even better the second time around. So I certainly would like to see us expand. I'd like to go into Kalamazoo and build a place there and then either to Lansing or maybe the Lakeshore to build a third location.
Sure.
My idea is that you can anybody can do things once. You do it one time and maybe it's successful, you might've got lucky.
Yeah.
You do it twice, okay. But you do it three times, well, now you know what you're doing. So if you got three times, then you could be bought out by a big company or start franchising or something. So my goal is to see three House Rules locations, and I hope we can do it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I love the energy. So I think if the energy is any indication that that you'll do it, and I've known you for a little while, and you've worked pretty darn hard at it. So plus you've built what seems like a good network. I see some of the social media stuff, and I don't even know that it's intentional or not, but it seems like it's just got a great vibe. You've continually seemed to grow, at least from my perspective on the outside.
Yeah, you're 100% right. We've had a great... kind of call it like kind of a grassroots energy. We have like people who are just really big fans of House Rules, like our customers are, and they love what we're doing, and we're just going to keep delivering it more and more. We've we hire great people, we have great customers, we treat our employees fairly, and I think those are all things that add up to be a popular and successful business.
Great. So if somebody else were maybe starting something like this in another state, not the markets that you were looking to chase after, what would be some of the initial advice on a similar type of business, at least,
Yeah. I mean, I always ask people some people say they want to work for themselves or owning a business. They see some people think they want to be rich and like, that's a good way to do it. And I often tell people, you don't want to do this. You want to make more money, you can go make more money working in an office or with less work, go do that. So sometimes I tell people you don't want to do this. Like it's a tough hurdle. Make sure you can do what you're saying you want to do.
Yeah.
But I think I think the advice that I really had for anyone is like not to be scared of it. Like, it's going to be a risk. This is a risk. And you got to be open to that risk. And then think it through very thoroughly with your partner or family or whoever, because it is I had to work two jobs for almost a year, and that was a stressful situation. And I don't know that everyone really wants to put the effort in to start that business, but I think it was certainly worth it, but it was risky. I don't know that I would do it exactly that same way again, but it'd be risky.
So two jobs to help fund the business startup?
Yeah, well, even more than the business startup, I had a little bit of capital on hand. I think when I tell people they need to start, you gotta have assets available. If you're gonna build a business, I don't care what it is, you have to have money, you have to have capital. If you own nothing, then you're gonna have a hard time starting a business. So I had a little bit of a money set aside in a 401k. I moved it over to an IRA on the advice of a financial advisor that I had. I always recommend get a financial advisor, by the way.
Yeah.
That money was available. It was nice. So I could use it at any time. And that's why he said that. So I had about 25 grand set aside for that. But I had my obligations at home to pay my mortgage and my bills. And when I talked to my wife and I told her, hey, I want to quit my very cushy office job to go do something that might fail. And I thought she'd hate me for it. I really did. I thought she was going to not want it, but she was very supportive. She said, hey, you have to just be able to make the mortgage payment. So if you're going to quit this job, that's fine. But if you have to go do shipped groceries or sell on Craigslist, you got to make that mortgage payment. So if you're willing to do all that work, I'm in. So I said, okay. So I worked my other job and this job, and the job I liked paid nothing, and the job I didn't like paid all my bills. So I did both. I kind of just transitioned from one to the other slowly until it was successful.
I think most entrepreneurs I've talked to have a similar story. Like, you got to fund that startup.
Yeah.
And you got to be willing to work 80 hours, whether it's 420 hours, whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes, yeah.
Between multiple jobs or at the same job. You just got to have that cash flow rolling early.
Yep, yep, for sure. And I worked for 6 months without a paid check at all from the bar. So I did what I did do. My partner, Brian, and I have a couple different duties in the bar. And one of the things I took over that he didn't really want to do was the financial portion of our business. And when I first joined in, I said, what is our break-even point? And he didn't know. And I thought that was really important to know. Like, this, what do we need to make? What is our goal? What are we trying to do? So I did a break-even analysis, and I did two of them. One of them was if we paid everyone but ourselves, because that's what we had to do. And then I did one where we get to pay ourselves. That one was higher, obviously. And we shot for the lower one first. I had to make sure I could pay my rent, pay my bills, pay my employees when I got them. That was the most important. I didn't pay myself, and I did skip out. I did not get paid a couple times once we started, but it has been very rare. And then the second break even was if we paid ourselves, which is where we are now.
Awesome.
That was nice. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that didn't happen overnight.
It did not happen overnight. Yeah. It took probably a good year before we started making anything that resembled a decent paycheck. Yeah.
I've been fortunate to be around a few different successful business owners over the years. And one of them, that's one of the first, I remember going on a ride one time, and we're driving past this, little ice cream shop, and some of these other businesses had cycled through. And the guy that I was with, he's like, so many people start these little businesses and they don't do that. How many ice cream cones do I have to sell?
Yeah.
To one, pay the rent, two, pay the utilities, and then pay the staff, and then have some profit. Everybody's in love with the idea.
Yeah.
They go get the t-shirts, the business card, put the sign up on the door, but actually understanding how much you have to actually make, which seems like it should be super simple and base level, but a lot of people just ignore that.
Yeah. I think some people go into a business with a passion project idea. I see this a lot when people want to start a business. They always think of a passion project, something you really like, whatever it is. You like making comic books. I'm going to go in a comic book business. And the thing I like to say, and it's cliche, and you might have heard it before, but like, a good baker doesn't run a good bakery. Because those are two different skills. Baking and running a bakery are two different skills. And sometimes you go into things that we just are really interested in. I'm passionate about this, and so I want to do that. But that doesn't mean it's ever going to pay the bills. And my little niche industry of board games attracts us a lot. People, I love board games. I'm going to start a board game bar. I'm saying, okay, well, we have the game portion. That's part of it. We have the business portion. And this is arguably the more important of the two. You have to understand the business side of what you do. And so people working in and on the business are two different skills that not everyone is quite prepared to deal with. So I caution people with passion projects a little bit. If you got $1 million and you want to start whatever business you want, well, go for it. It doesn't matter for you. But if you don't have $1 million, most of us don't, you want to maybe just be sensitive that you're starting something fun, but it has to pay the bills. There's a financial backing of this you need to understand. You need to understand the economy of your business. So,
yeah. So any thoughts on your kids or maybe somebody coming out of school, what they might, like, you've done a pretty good job with this so far. 4 years in, looking to expand.
Yeah.
After, again, you had you went to college for something completely different. you worked in a whole different field, pretty much beyond that. I mean, it had some related.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of advice would you give some, for instance, your kids, or anybody coming out of college right now, or high school even?
Yeah, I don't, as far as advice, I'm not sure. I would caution people that college maybe isn't always the answer. I don't always think that everyone needs to go to school. I think that staring down a, you know, 30, 40, I don't even know what college costs now, $50, $60,000 in debt to go make $25,000 a year is probably not a good idea. So people really need to consider what they want to get out of college. I think there are lots of options that are not college related. I think just getting some job experience doing anything is probably as valuable as anything you're going to do in college. Go, if you're interested in running a comic book store, go work at a comic book store. Go talk to a comic book store guy, see what they got to say. I think getting to know some people who do the work you're interested in probably would go as far as a college degree and cost you a whole lot less.
Yeah, I asked that because we were talking beforehand and both of us have similar thoughts on the college experience and, you know, the value it brings. Of course, you know, if you're going to be an engineer,
yeah,
or a doctor, you have, yeah, to have to go that route. Yeah. But if you want to be an entrepreneur, own a business, work for yourself, you know, might as well go work for somebody else, kind of learn the ropes.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I kind of think when I look back on the things I did really well, I think one of the things I did was I was able to recognize an opportunity. And I think that's some things that people don't always appreciate. I had a vision, I saw an opportunity, and I could paint the picture of what I wanted it to be. So when I first came in and met with Brian and saw his place, I instantly saw the potential and I saw the opportunity. And that kind of drove what I was going to do after that. I could see where it could go. It wasn't there. It started off much less, but I thought we could get it there. I don't think people always have that vision to see what something could be, you know, looking at a business that's closed or a place and like, what could this business be? Thinking about it in those terms, I think, is something I did well and was able to capitalize on.
Where do you think you learned that or developed it?
I don't really know. I think I've always had some kind of an entrepreneurial spirit. I was always scared of doing my own thing. I had my friend Dan called this the brass handcuffs. They're not gold. You've heard of gold handcuffs. You make $500,000, you can't walk away. Well, I had brass handcuffs. I made less than that, but I was scared to walk away from that standard income. You know, if I made $100,000 a year, that's pretty good money. I had benefits and vacation. Like, that sounds good. Why would you walk away from that? And I was scared to go out on my own and do something different. I had kids, you know, like a lot of people do, and a mortgage and bills, and it was intimidating going on my own. But I think I always had that kind of drive, that curiosity to be my own boss and, you know, work my own schedule and kind of, you know, drive my own life for once. And it always appealed to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you mentioned you put in, you know, 5 years worth or some fashion of research into it. So that probably had something to do with being able to see the right opportunity when it did come along. So yeah. Good stuff. Well, I appreciate you having here. Anything you'd like to share before we head out? How can people find you?
House Rules Lounge is on in 404 Ionia Avenue in Grand Rapids. We're right across from the downtown market. And if you like board games and beer, that's what we do the best of. Show up. Soon we're going to have burgers and fries. Those will be great too. So yeah, come check it out.
Awesome. Thanks, Nate.
Yeah.